From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield, this is Inside Eagle Nation, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.
Strike three called, it is well with my soul at J.I. Clement Stadium.
Your all-access look into Eagle Athletics is Inside Eagle Nation.
Toogie with one, a three, and a win it! Got it! Game over!
Let's go to the Learfield studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
Special edition of Inside Eagle Nation, as this weekend will mark the 30th anniversary of the Hugo Bowl. We'll dive deeper into that a little bit later on in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed. You got to catch up with Mike Cummings, a very familiar name around Georgia Southern Athletics, a Hall of Famer, has been on the athletic board for a while. But really good stuff coming up from Mike.
Yeah, considering how important this week and that night was for Georgia Southern football, this is a really important thing to not only be able to talk about, but to have it down so people can get a better understanding of what exactly it was like 30 years ago when it happened. And, I mean, look at where it's gone from there because, I mean, you're going to hear it, but Georgia Southern had attention, but this was the first night game in the history of Paulson Stadium. And that was part of the explosion that Georgia Southern football has experienced.
Love when he talks about the iconic picture of Irk Russell on a knee with the football on the ground.
Oh, that's all coming up.
It's
that's
all coming.
But
first, got to remind you, our good friends at Arcola Septic, a proud sponsor of Inside Eagle Nation. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A very busy edition of Inside Eagle Nation this week is pretty much everybody starting to get into full swing. You've got Georgia Southern baseball starting their fall practice yesterday, if you're listening to this on time on Tuesday, started it on Monday.
And to our knowledge, the hot dogs and steaks have already been purchased for when the Fall World Series concludes. The winners are going to eat well. The losers are not going to eat as well. But this is always something we look forward to.
That's something we've got to get head coach Rodney Hennon to hop on the podcast about, where that started and
Fall World Series?
Well, no, everybody does the Fall World Series, but the winners of the Fall World Series get steaks. The losers get hot dogs. Wonder where and why he started that.
We'll get him.
We will.
We know where he is.
Yeah. He's across the parking lot.
Yeah,
Georgia Southern Athletics kicked off into full swing of things as Georgia Southern men's soccer started the week. They are now 3-1 on the season after a 2-1 victory against North Florida last week down in Jacksonville. They will head back home this Saturday to face off against Campbell at 7 o'clock. They will also have a midweek game at Stetson down in DeLand, 7 o'clock kickoff as well for Georgia Southern men's soccer. Women's soccer had a little bit of a busy week this past week, headed up to Athens in the midweek on Friday. That one started, got through the first half, and then in the 52nd minute of the game, the floodgates opened up in Athens, and that became a no contest, so it doesn't count as a win, doesn't count as a loss, doesn't count as a tie for Georgia Southern women's soccer against the Bulldogs, almost as if that game never happened. And then they returned home to face off against the Blazers of UAB on Sunday and fell narrowly 1-0. Against UAB. They will start Sunbelt Conference play this week. Hard to believe that teams are already in conference play. But they will head to Coastal in Conway, South Carolina, Friday at 7 o'clock kickoff, and then return home Sunday for the Trojans of Little Rock. Sunday, 1 o'clock start at Eagle Field and Irk Park. Georgia Southern men's tennis kicked off their season with the Thomasville Invitational back on Friday. You had a pair of freshmen and Neil Kandai and Yop Aldring, their first collegiate wins for the freshmen. Good to see a couple of new Eagles get on the score sheet.
I'm proud of you for doing that in one take.
I am too. They will head to the Mercer Bear Gridiron Classic Friday through Sunday of this week up in Macon as a number of teams heading to the mid-state to try to avoid some orange and take on the Mercer Bears. Yeah, pretty much. Georgia Southern women's tennis will also be at the Mercer Invitational this weekend, Friday through Sunday as well. They're coming off the good things up the College of Charleston invite as Elizabeth Goins and Nadja Meyer made it to the championship round in the doubles at the CFC invite. So congratulations to them on this past week for Georgia Southern women's tennis. Women's golf will play in their first tournament of the year up in Greenville, North Carolina, this coming up Monday and Tuesday. So a week from today, they will be finishing up in Greenville in the Pirate Collegiate Classic hosted by East Carolina at the Greenville Country Club. Georgia Southern men's golf, after their first tournament of the year, was canceled after the Battle of the Briars Creek was canceled due to Hurricane Dorian a couple of weeks ago. They will officially start off the slate up in Winston-Salem as the Demon Deacon invite on Monday and Tuesday. So it's about time to start talking about head coach Carter Collins and all things Georgia Southern men's golf.
Again?
Yeah. We never really stopped.
Well, that's my point. We have our unofficial yet official Carter Collins segment. We've been slacking a little bit, but that doesn't mean we're not thinking about you boys.
Georgia Southern volleyball hosted the Georgia Southern invite this past weekend at Hanner Fieldhouse. Friday, a big time day for Georgia Southern volleyball as they knocked off UNC Asheville 3-1 and then knocked off Southern Miss 3-0 on Friday as we sat on the bus.
Yep.
Waiting for the plane to get the okay. We're going to dive deeper into that.
I didn't think we'd get to hear about both matches, yeah, but knowing that two wins were in the bag before we took off for Minneapolis was even better.
So the first two wins in the home slate under head coach Chad Willis. They would fall to Winthrop 3-0 on Saturday, but taking 2 out of 3 in the Georgia Southern invite, they will head to North Florida to take on the Ospreys on Tuesday and then make their way up to Knoxville, Tennessee, up on Rocky Top as the Tennessee Classic. They will face North Dakota State on Friday and then Tennessee and ETSU on Saturday. That Tennessee match going to be on the SEC Network Plus. But a good weekend for head coach Chad Willis. We've talked about it pretty much ever since he was hired, that he has really taken hold of this program and making it into more of a program for Georgia Southern volleyball.
You build in the offseason, you see the results of that during the season, and to go through 7 matches and to still have a winning record, it's going to get a little bit more difficult. We know that overall Sunbelt volleyball has really improved over the last few years. Arkansas State is always good. Coastal Carolina is always good. But this is an opportunity for Georgia Southern to get that further preparation before league play officially gets in to full bump set spike.
Ooh, I like it.
Just thought of that.
There it is.
Can't really say full swing. It's overused.
Full bump set spike.
Full bump set spike.
Something tells me that Georgia Southern volleyball may start using that.
Wings up.
Do it. We mentioned Georgia Southern baseball getting started in their fall practice. A Georgia Southern baseball alum in Sam Howard, former Eagle now with the Colorado Rockies, got called up a couple of months ago and has done really good things at the major league level, but on Sunday recorded his first major league win. Really good to see from Sam, and saw it on Facebook. His mom Beverly posted it on Facebook, but good to see him, and he's really doing a lot of good things for Colorado. In the month of September, 7 appearances, a 2.25 ERA, picking up his win, 4 innings of work, just 1 run, and struck out 4.
He's had 3 total stints with the big club, 2 of them coming this year. I think he's more than proven himself at AAA Albuquerque. I check on his stats just about on a daily basis. And it's tough to know when certain organizations are going to call certain guys up, because the way that MILB.com lists their individual player pages, one day they will show, okay, Sam Howard, left-handed pitcher, Albuquerque Isotopes. You click on it, 5 minutes later, it will change to Sam Howard, left-handed pitcher, Colorado Rockies, because it's all under the same advanced media platform, whether it's minor league or major league. His numbers in AAA have been really good. He's averaging better than a strikeout per inning, and we're seeing what he can do at the big league level. You get let guys get comfortable, understand what it's like to try to get out the best hitters in the world. But to pick up that first victory, that's only going to help him, and that's only going to be the start of what is hopefully going to be a successful tenure up in the NL West.
That a Colorado Rockies team that will see their season come to a close, as they not going to be making the playoffs this year, but good to see Sam Howard doing really well in Colorado, and that's not necessarily a pitcher-friendly ballpark, to say the very least.
Well, you know, they try the humidor, but it doesn't really matter. Nope. You're that high up, the ball gonna go.
Georgia Southern football fell to the Minnesota Golden Gophers on Saturday, 35-32 the final. That was a heck of a game. We'll dive deeper into the game a little bit later on. But first, we got to get to getting there. We left the FOC at about 12:45, made our way down to Savannah, and got to the gate of the tarmac, and then we sat.
Well, there are stop signs on the gates leading into the signature tarmac, so that's the literal stop sign. But the signature representative came on the buses that were there waiting for the team, and we got the figurative stop sign to say, hey, we're not taking off anytime soon. We need to get you guys a new plane, so you're going to be waiting here for a little while. What it did, though, despite having to be there a couple of extra hours, the team had a chance to go to Pooler, take advantage of City Hall. They had meetings to get themselves mentally ready. Eventually, we did take off, didn't get up to Minneapolis until around 9 o'clock Central, and by then, it's pretty much grab a bag, make sure you've got the right hotel key, and get your head on that pillow, because it was an earlier kick. It was a 2:30 Central kick on Saturday afternoon, and I think we timed it out of, I think it ended up being about 32 hours from takeoff to touchdown from Friday evening until what turned out to be very early Sunday morning.
In those 32 hours, Frank had one goal. It was to get some cheese curds from Minnesota. We got that. We went over to, just across the street from the hotel was a restaurant called The Republic. It was a very cool little place. It was one of those places that's kind of darker, the low lighting. You've got some music in the background, but got some cheese curds. Terry got some kind of rice bowl with an egg. Bison burgers all around.
The bison burger was good. I will vouch for the bison burger. But we flooded that table with cheese curds.
Yeah, we did.
Got some fries, nice hand-cut fries.
Oh, yeah.
And the area that we were staying in, there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
But the one place that we were told to go, where our hotel was make sure you stop by the Republic, and it took us maybe 30 steps across the street to get to this place, and with all the travel that we had, that was probably the best-case scenario to get something as close as possible.
Georgia Southern would then face off against the Golden Gophers the next afternoon at TCF Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. Before we get too far into the X's and O's, a couple of awards handed out earlier on this week, as you had Rashad Byrd, the Sunbelt Conference Defensive Player of the Week. He had the forced fumble, fumble recovery, 44-yard touchdown return, and a sack all in one play. He also led the team in tackles. So congratulations to Rashad for the Sunbelt Defensive Player of the Week.
He didn't have a double-digit tackle game his first 2 years. Now he's got two in his first three games.
That'll work.
Look for him on an all-conference team. I'm just telling you. He's having that kind of year.
Yeah.
And he's on an upward trajectory. Raynard Ellis is in that category as well. I think he's somebody that's going to win an award by the time the year's over with. But somebody else that did win an award.
Monquavion Brinson.
There you go.
Man-Man picked up the Sunbelt Conference Special Teams Player of the Week. A 77-yard field goal block return that Raynard Ellis pummeled through the line, blocked it, Man-Man picked it up, and 77 yards later, it was time for wings up.
Terry called it 2 seconds before it happened. It's on the highlight that we have cut. Granted, he says the same thing after every opponent field goal, but if you don't keep saying it, eventually it has no chance to be true. So he says, let's block it, scoop and score. Low kick from a Georgia native, Michael Lance. Ellis broke through the line, knocked it down. Man-Man picks it up, and you're thinking, okay, he's going to get a little bit. But the way that Minnesota's field goal team tried to surround him, once Man-Man worked back a couple of yards and started running the other way, I went back and watched the film. You could see Jay Bowdry with his hand up like, come on, man, follow me, let's go, let's go, let's go. He ends up going 77 yards in one of the more exciting plays in recent Eagle history. And it was Georgia Southern's first return touchdown of a blocked field goal since Chad Nybert against Marshall back in 1995. That's how rare it is, period, but especially for Georgia Southern.
I love whenever you bring something like that up on the air, that it's the first since 95 and Nybert did it, and Terry just looks at you and goes, wow,
See, I want to have one week where I say, that's the first time that's happened since Terry Harvin's punt back in 89. And just see if he's listed. He's like, oh, wow. See if he actually hears that it was he that did it.
So congratulations once again to Rashad Byrd and Monquavion Brinson for Sunbelt Conference Players of the Week, Byrd the Defensive Player of the Week, and Brinson Special Teams Player of the Week. And those were two plays that late in the ball game, Georgia Southern didn't have a whole lot of possessions. Second half, you and I were talking about it. You had three possessions. Want to say, what was the number of plays Georgia Southern ran? It was something crazy.
In the second half, Georgia Southern was out-snapped 47-12. The Eagles had the ball for 6.5 minutes after halftime.
Wow.
They ran 42 plays total. Georgia Southern doesn't run a lot of plays, period. But historically, those 42 plays are tied for the fewest that the Eagles have run since the restart of football.
And you say all that, Georgia Southern had the lead with 13 seconds.
They led by 4 at a Big Ten school with 13 seconds left. Despite running 12 plays in the second half, how do you score when you don't have the football? Well, you block a field goal and you run it back. You have a strip sack. You recover that. You go in. And with under 4 minutes to play, you're leading 32-28.
You felt like, from the word go, Georgia Southern felt like they could go into Minnesota and knock off the Gophers.
We had heard all week that it was going to be a large spread, and I think at some outlets it was 17, 18 points. So that's three scores. But the Eagles definitely felt better about this matchup, and it was a better matchup in comparison to LSU, and I still think LSU is going to end up as a playoff team. They've just been tremendous the first 3 weeks of the season. Even though Minnesota was 2-0, they had blown double-digit leads in each of their first two games, only to rally late to win. Well, what happens on Saturday at TCF Bank Stadium? They build a big lead. It was only 8, but it was still a lead. The Eagles have to get creative in order to come back. Minnesota just made enough plays at the end. And I know that there were some penalties. 10 penalties are the most that the Eagles have committed since Chad Lunsford took over as head coach. And I think those are issues that they will get fixed. The phrase that we heard on Monday, the phrase that we repeated on the coaches' show, and the phrase that we repeated during the game a couple of times, is the switch being flipped. So many are going to associate that with winning a game like this to flip the switch. I still believe, and we're going to have to wait and see if this actually happened, but I still believe a game like this could flip that switch. You want to know what you need to do to win a game, whether it's P5 or not, but more importantly, you need to know what you can't do to win a game like this. Georgia Southern had all of those shortcomings and still led. So you take away just a little of that. You take away the 2 fumbles for the Eagles inside their own 30-yard line. You take away only 123 yards rushing, but you can understand that a little bit more when you only have the football for 42 plays. How do you make up for it? 5 sacks and 11 tackles for loss, 10 of those after halftime. Those are the most sacks and TFLs that the Eagle defense has recorded ever against a Power 5 team. So that's impressive. Quinn Williams had his first 2 career sacks. Man, it was great to see him play well. We already talked about Byrd. We talked about Reynard Ellis. Randy Wade continues to play well and does not get the recognition that guy deserves. I watched that guy in practice. I don't know if there's anybody play in and play out that goes harder than Randy Wade.
Yeah.
There is so much respect for how he goes about it, that rush end, that dog position. It's a microcosm of how hard that defense played. And yeah, Minnesota had 382 yards of offense, 289 of which came through the air. And they had to deal with one of the best receivers in the country and Tyler Johnson. He played like it. 10 catches, 140 yards, and 3 touchdowns, including the game winner. But you're thinking, if you're the Eagles, if you take away just one of the bad things that happened to you, maybe you're not just winning it close. Maybe you're winning it convincingly. That was the feeling. Yeah, there was an opportunity that was probably, it probably slipped through Georgia Southern's fingers. You take that away, maybe you're winning by 2 scores. But I think that's how close Georgia Southern was to not only winning, but to making it not a very close game. Ultimately, though, I think for a lot of people that saw the first part of the schedule, 1-2 is realistically where the Eagles were probably going to be. And it doesn't matter how you get there, but when you've got two Power Fives in 3 weeks and you're playing the number six team in the FCS, I think in a way you're fortunate to be 1-2. Yeah, there was a chance to be 2-1. But you did that without your starting quarterback. You did that without your kick returner, who's still going to have to miss at least one more game. It's there. I believe what Chad Lunsford said about this team. If they could just clean a little bit, don't act like they've got to get everything done this second, because you've got the bye week. You don't play again until the following Saturday. Raging Cajuns come to town. First time they've been here in 3 years. That's going to be a huge conference opening game and the first of two in a week, because you've got to go to South Alabama the next Thursday. Work on themselves, evaluate what needs to be done, take care of it, believe in the process, that GATA process. There's a lot to like about this team. There's a lot to like about this team.
A 35-32 victory for Minnesota over Georgia Southern. But again, Georgia Southern will look ahead to the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, but they've got a little bit of a longer look as an off week this week, as Lala will face off against Ohio. We'll dive into the Cajuns a little bit more in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, but as promised, now it's time to step into some Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Mike Cummings.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed.
Mike, coming up on the 21st, it's the 30-year anniversary of the Hugo Bowl. We'll get to that more, but first, I want to understand, from someone who has seen this program grow from the very beginning, before there even was a modern era of Georgia Southern football, to that point and even to what we've been able to experience right now. Take us back, if you would, to the extremely early stages of restarting Georgia Southern football.
I guess probably starting with the press conference and having to go locate a football that they could present with Bucky and Irk to show that we were going to be playing football was the starting point. And from there, everybody was so excited that Irk was going to be leading our program that we all wanted to do whatever we could to try to assist in getting this thing off the ground. Dale Eck brought a lot of energy, enthusiasm on campus, and he probably went against the grain with a lot of the academic people in the vote. But he felt like that was something the university needed to help it grow and helping the visibility of the university across the country, and he was, I think, spot on. So we approached Bucky Wagner about hosting a football game in Dublin to do a fundraiser. Billy Hobbs, who owned a sporting goods store right down the mall from me at the surf shop in the mall here in Dublin, and we sat down and started talking about the way we could do it, and we put it out to Bucky, and Bucky liked the idea. We decided we would have a football game and do a barbecue dinner, sell tickets, and give all the money that we could raise that night to Bucky and Irk to try to help them in what they were trying to do in Statesboro.
So you spent all this time planning this special game at the Shamrock Bowl, but being able to execute that, what do you remember about that day?
Well, we were fortunate in that we had a group of guys out in Dexter, Georgia, who did a lot of cooking. Matter of fact, they had, when Jimmy Carter was finishing his term as president, they had done a lot of fundraisers for him around the state when he was running for election. And they dug up the West Lawn at the White House and dug a pit and did the barbecuing. So they came highly recommended. So they agreed that they would cook and donate their time and services and help us secure the dinner that night. And so everything that we did as far as selling tickets was a profit. So we brought them in. They did all the setup for us. Billy was close friends with a lot of those guys. We worked with Morris Lupton and Bobby Underwood in Statesboro. In setting, coordinating ticket sales down in Statesboro and Bullock County in that area. And we just, honestly, we were just very, very lucky. This is the first time for any of us to do something of this magnitude and to set it up on a, it was on a Halloween night, which was probably not the best night in the world to have a football game with all the kids out trick-or-treating, but there were enough people that wanted to see Georgia Southern football that it was highly successful.
There is an iconic photo of Irk Russell on a knee with a football at the Shamrock Bowl, and I know there's got to be a deeper story regarding that photo.
Frank Fortune took that picture. I've got a couple of them, one here at the store and one at home. And Frank has seen it and said because of the type of paper that was used back then, it allowed this not to fade and do like a lot of photographs will do over a period of time. But that picture was used in Irk's book. It was used in Louis Grizzard's book. That was another thing that fell right in our lap. Louis Grizzard was probably one of the most well-read guys in the AJC and later some books that he published. And he had a deep love and passion for Georgia football, and but especially Irk Russell. So that night, he shows up unannounced, and we got an electronic bullhorn, gave it to him. He walked out to the 50-yard line pre-game and started telling some of his Irk Russell stories from the days when Irk was the defense coordinator at the University of Georgia. And it was quite exciting to have him there. He was very well thought of in this part. But he came up to me and he wanted to go to a bar after the game called Estes, and I'd never heard of it. It was just a local hole-in-the-wall downtown. So I had to get directions, and he wanted to go, so we took him, and there was a group from Statesboro and a travel home, and we go down there, and it's just a beer hall with a jukebox, and Lewis was in his element down there, and there was an old gentleman from the VA hospital here sitting on a bar stool controlling the jukebox. If you'd put money in and played a song, and the guy behind it on the stool didn't like it, he'd hit the reject button. But he and Lewis struck up a relationship, and both of their favorite song was In the Garden. So we heard In the Garden an awful lot that night in the bar. And they tell the story of that group in the travel home from Statesboro that left here about 2:30 in the morning. One of them had to go to a funeral the next day, Statesboro, and that was probably feeling a little bit under the weather after a big night out there, and got back to Statesboro and went to the funeral, and the first choir, the first song the choir sang was In the Garden. So Lewis wrote about that in his book, about his experience up here for the football game.
Success came so quickly after the restart. Championships in 85 and 86. But could you feel, could the rest of this fan base, could this culture feel at a certain point when you knew that success was going to come?
I think probably more than anything else that the knowing that we had Irk at the helm, I always felt like we were probably a little bit better than we really were because of him. I know the kids have always played a lot harder for him. He gave them confidence in themselves. A lot of them were people that have athletes that had been overlooked. But he was able to maximize all their potential. He was just a tremendous motivator. And I think in the fan base and in the relationships he had with all of us that were trying to support the program, he made you want to be better and wanted you to do as much as you could do. So we always felt like in a close situation that Irk would win out.
What are some of your favorite memories from those first couple of seasons?
Probably just the fact that we started football and the pride that we had in knowing that we were going to, I mean, everybody felt like we were going to be Georgia or Notre Dame, and that was a little bit pie in the sky. But just the fact that we were organized in football at Georgia Southern because it was such a hotbed for talent, and a lot of the university was probably sitting on a launching pad, and just put it out there nationally, and we were able to attract a lot of student athletes as well as other students from around the country because of the visibility of our football program. I think traveling with the team, you build a bond. Some of the early days going to Chattanooga, playing on the old University of Tennessee field on campus in Chattanooga at night. I remember they couldn't stand for us to come up there and run that option. And Frank Hook and I were standing on the sidelines one night up there, and the field was not a very well manicured field. It had a lot of bare spots, and he and I were standing on the field pregame, and I was telling Frank, I said, look at all this how wet it is over here. And some young kid working out there said, well, it ought to be. Said they had fire trucks out here three times this week watering down the field. So they were trying to affect the way Tracy, how we ran that option laterally, making the field a little slicker than it probably should have been because it hadn't rained up there in weeks. But we traveled with the team. Eric said he saw more sunrises on I-16 headed back to Statesboro than he did at Amelia Island. they'd drive to a ball game, play, take a shower, get back on the bus with a chicken box dinner, and ride all night and get back to Statesboro. I mean, we didn't have much, but I think that's what built the blue-collar mentality that Chad likes to talk about now.
Why was Irk Russell the right person for this place?
I think maybe twofold. I think Irk related well to the type of people in South Georgia. And I think maybe Irk had felt a little shunned in Athens, and he wanted to prove something. And I think he had a passion to prove that he was capable. And for him to come in and do what he did. I'll never forget Dale Lick when he went around was doing an unscientific poll asking boosters about Irk. And he came around and was in my store leaning on a tie rack. And he said, Mike, he says, what do you think about us having football? I said, I would love to see us have football. I said, but, you know, I don't know who or what we can do to get this thing going. He said, well, what do you know about Irk Russell? And I said, well, I've got a couple of friends that played for him and just absolutely loved him, would run through a wall for him. He says, well, you think he would be a great coach for us? I said, if we could get him, do you think we can get him? He said, well, we're going to try. And that was probably the thing that got him more than anything else was that Dale Lick felt like that he could get him in Statesboro.
Success comes. National attention was there to a degree, but you get to 1989. We know how successful that season ended up being. But September the 21st was the Hugo Bowl, and we're now talking 30 years later about one of the most historic experiences in all of college football. What I'd like you to do is walk Eagle Nation back through the couple of days leading into what turned out to be one of the most important nights that this program has ever had.
Well, I think the excitement, if I remember correctly, once we got the ESPN situation where we were going to be televised, I think we had rental, if I remember correctly, we had lights that were rental lights. We had to bring, Paulson was not like it is today, and we had to bring in lights. And then when the hurricane started forming and we didn't know what direction it would come, there were people on campus staying in touch with the Hurricane Center, tracking that storm. It looked like it was going to go away. Then it looked like it was coming more towards Savannah. And it was in limbo whether or not we were actually going to be able to play the game. But at the last, you know, late that day, and they said that we were going to be able to play, and it was going more up towards Charleston. They would not allow the ESPN camera crew to be up on top of the Lupton building. They didn't want anybody up on anything that was not secure and very high up. So they brought that down. They were evacuating Savannah, Hilton Head, all the islands, St. Simons. Everything was moving toward Dublin. And on a personal note, I remember my mother-in-law and father-in-law, we were urging them to leave Savannah, but they didn't want to leave. But we finally talked them into coming to Dublin and staying, and about 30 minutes after they got here, we got in the van and headed towards Statesboro, and they said, wait a minute, you made us leave. Why are you going back down there? And so it was kind of funny on the eastbound, everything that was moving was power trucks and any kind of utility vehicles, and we were one of the few civilian vehicles headed down in that direction, and everybody else was double bumper to bumper coming out of Savannah and out of the coastal regions. But it rained and it rained and it rained, but Eagle Nation came out and supported, or came out on the field pregame and looked up in the sky and had water running down his face, and he went back in the locker room and talking to everybody. I think half the team thought he was crying because there's all the water on his face, and he got real emotional and gave a pretty emotional talk to the team before they came out. And we pretty much dominated Middle Tennessee that night, and it was just hardcore fans that wanted to come out and support Georgia Southern, and it was a big win, and I think it's something that we'll always get to talk about. I don't know the actual head count that was there, but I can assure you there's probably about 50 or 75,000 people that claim they were there.
Where did you watch the game from that night?
My seats were the top row right in front of the Eagle Club, the right there at the concrete wall of all the pictures. We had the yellow raincoats on so we can, my wife and I and kids, we can pick ourselves out of the picture. We were right there by the aisle in, I guess, Section D. I had taken a poster that, or a vinyl that we had taken out to Tacoma, Washington, about ESPN, and we took it down to get on TV with that with my youngest son. So that poster won two big games for us. We won in Tacoma with it, and we won in Statesboro that night.
Once it had all gone down, did you realize the kind of impact that it had had, and could you possibly have anticipated the kind of impact that it has had these last 30 years?
No. I mean, I don't care how big you dream, you just can't imagine with the things that we dealt with and what we had available and what the facilities and all of that. I don't think we could. I think we could wish and hope, and we look around and see what other people had, but there was I don't think we could dream that big, that we could have what we have today.
Once again, that is Mike Cummings, a longtime supporter of Georgia Southern Athletics in a lot of different ways. And Mike is a guy that, he was one of the first people that I met when I got to Statesboro, what feels like about 37 years ago.
It was. You're only 25, but it was
right.
37 years ago.
Yeah, it's like the math. Never mind.
That was Central Time Zone right there. All
yeah, it was. But Mike is one of those guys that seems like he knows everybody, and he has served Georgia Southern, quote-unquote, in a lot of different ways. He's been on the presidential search committee for the university. He serves on the athletic board, a longtime donor for Georgia Southern Athletics, and just an overall really good guy.
You need people like Mike Cummings to not only get your program going, but you need people like Mike Cummings to sustain your program. And with Georgia Southern now barking with the big dogs in the FBS, every little bit of support is absolutely vital. But for someone like that who's been around for 40 years, you don't have to work at it. It just comes natural. He's an alum. He gets it. He understands what this place is about. He saw it at the beginning when it was tennis courts, scotch tape, and enthusiastically unathletic guys, as Irk Russell put it back in 1981, when you didn't really know you had a team. You just had a collection of dudes who really wanted to play the game. It just took faith. It took trying to see what the future could be. And we've seen a great past. We're experiencing a revitalization in the present. I still don't think we've seen nothing yet with what the future is going to hold. But with everything that Mike has done, is doing, and will do for this place, he's somebody that we had to talk to, not only about what Hugo was like 30 years ago, this September the 21st, but it's all part of that early story of Georgia Southern football that Coach Lunsford has time and time again called that epic story. And a big chapter in that epic story is that Hugo Bowl, which today, if that scenario gets presented today, that game never gets played.
No.
That game never gets played. But the fact that it did gave those people the experience and gives us the story that we had a chance to reshare again. And we get a chance to look back at it every year when it happens. We get to look at old media guides, pictures, newspaper clippings, whatever. But to get it from the horse's mouth, from one of the people who was actually there, sitting in the stands with about 100,000 other people that said they were at Paulson Stadium that rainy night, just something you have to do.
I loved what Mike said, that he was one of what seems like 50, 60, 70,000 that say they were there.
Oh, yeah.
And we've joked about it before. That stadium was packed, especially considering there was a hurricane going over top. But it seems like everybody in the state of Georgia says that they were there.
You've heard the legend about Bobby Thompson's shot heard around the world for the Giants. I mean, the Polo Grounds held 20, 30,000 people. There were 300,000 people that said they were there, saw that home run, one of the most famous moments in the history of the game of baseball. But for those that were part of it, those that were there, not only that night, but for the early part of Eagle football and being able to share it now, just gives you a glimpse of where we've come from and what we've been able to do.
You've said it. It's hard to believe that's 30 years ago.
It was 30 years ago last week. That was one of the storylines leading into the ESPN broadcast. I've watched the broadcast with Barry Tompkins numerous times. But just a couple of days before, and we put this out on social media, the Board of Regents and the university system approved Georgia Southern College becoming Georgia Southern University. And granted, that didn't happen until July 1st of 1990. But that was a big part of, hey, this is Georgia Southern College hosting its first ever night home game on ESPN. But, oh, by the way, the next time we talk about them, they're going to be a university. That's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Just on the backdrop of a Category 4 hurricane, but that's...
Right,
that
yeah,
was
no
too.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Georgia Southern has more stories that just talking to anybody outside of Eagle Nation just seem unbelievable. Like, if you step back and look at the 100,000-foot view of it, 30 years ago, Georgia Southern brought in lights to have ESPN broadcast the game at Allen E. Paulson Stadium with a Category 4 hurricane. We've heard Roger earlier on in Eagle Tales in previous episodes talk about how as long as the camera stayed up, they were going to be able to do it. Camera stayed up, they did it, they broadcasted it, and it was ready to rock and roll.
Terry had to punt in it. He's talked all the time about what it was like trying to not only punt a wet football, but punt a heavy football.
Yeah, something tells me that's one of those nights you hope the wind's at your back.
Terry, why is your right foot so much bigger than your left foot? Well, it's funny you ask, because we played this game back in 1989. It's part of the story. It is part of the story. If you take that away, I mean, Eagle football was still done more than what anybody thought was possible when the restart happened back in 81, but to know that that is part of the fabric of the culture that this program has created over nearly 40 years. It's a huge chapter.
Huge chapter in the book for Georgia Southern football. The next chapter may be the Georgia Southern Eagles against the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. Again, an off week this week. And so it's 2 weeks until Louisiana will come into town to Allen E. Paulson Stadium. As of now, they sit 2-1 after a, we'll say, convincing victory over Texas Southern. 77-6, the final in that one.
That was a call-the-dogs-off victory.
That was one that we need to go into a little bit. There's not very many times that we'll go into a 77-6 victory for an opponent.
By the way, before that, it is a 6 o'clock kick next Saturday. That was confirmed. 12-day window announced yesterday in the media window. This is a 6 o'clock kick on the 28th, Paulson Stadium, first conference home game.
But 77-6, Louisiana over Texas Southern. They had 748 total yards, did the Cajuns. And we were talking about it before we started recording this. They switched up the rules, for lack of a better term.
This was a 56-6 game at halftime. So what happened was the referee and both head coaches get together and they end up reducing the length of the quarters in the second half to 10 minutes, which if it's agreed upon by both sides, you can do. NCAA rules stipulate that you cannot have a running clock. but you can change the length of the quarters that get played. Again, if both this, if both sides decide that it's in the best interest to not get anybody else hurt, and to the issue was decided. There wasn't a whole lot more that Louisiana needed to do. They proved that they were the better team. They got their experience. Just about everybody got a chance to play. Numerous walk-ons got touchdowns. And one stat that Tim Buckley, the advertiser, brought up, Cajuns had 13 possessions. They scored touchdowns on 11 of them. The only two that they didn't were the end of the first half and the end of the game.
Good grief.
So the clock ran out both times. They probably were trying to score at the end of the game, but the only two times they didn't score was when the clock ran out on them. Yeah.
Oh, mama.
They had almost 500 yards of offense in the first half. Texas Southern was just overmatched. And that was despite them having a Power 5 transfer quarterback in DeAndre Johnson. We've watched previous seasons of Last Chance U. DeAndre Johnson was at East Mississippi in the first couple of seasons before it moved to Independence out in Kansas. I know it's going to change again for Season 5. Dude's a good quarterback. Yep. But as we saw, Texas Southern's issues were pretty heavily on the defensive side of the football. And we're not going to do a full Cajun preview this week. That's something that we will do next Tuesday when we're closer to the kickoff between the Eagles and the Cajuns. But three guys you're going to want to know very, very well leading in are their three running backs: Raymond Calais, Trey Regis, and Elijah Mitchell. Very seldom does a team have two good running backs that you can throw out there. These guys have three. They all had 750 yards a year ago. First time in conference history that the same team has had three 750-yard rushers. Georgia Southern didn't even do that in 14 and 15 when they broke the conference record for rushing two different times. But they all had good games. I mentioned already the numerous walk-ons score touchdowns. They got a lot of guys' experience. They did what they needed to do. But this week, they got a test. They got a long road trip. They got to go to Ohio. And this is an Ohio team that's won nine games in back-to-back years. They've won bowl games in back-to-back years. They've got a four-year starter at quarterback in Nathan Rourke. Somehow I feel like Georgia Southern should have played Ohio at some point in a bowl game with as much as we thought we were going to play a MAC school. We got Bowling Green in 15. It was always one of those teams that the Eagles were rumored to have played. But it will be something to watch as to how the Cajuns play after winning by 71 points.
You know what I'm looking forward to? It's okay to say no.
I couldn't think of anything snappy, so no, I don't know what you're looking forward to.
Getting to see our buddies. Jay Walker, the voice of the Raging Cajuns. Craig Melanson, the world-class spotter is what I'm going to start calling him. And we haven't really delved into this very much. Craig has come up with a program that, for those of you that are not full in on what a radio booth does, which why you would be, I don't know.
Well, there are what normal radio booths do, and then there's what you have to do for our booth.
Yeah, we ain't getting into that. But Craig has come up with this program, and he is a genius for coming up with this, I'm convinced. There's a way, and don't ask me how. All I know is I do this, this happens. You can type in the number of who has the ball, and it'll pop up with their name, their stats, some biography on them. It's as simple as two buttons and enter. I haven't fully gone to that yet, because I'm still old school and like to point at paper, but Craig has made it so easy.
Well, there's something about having it in your hands.
Yeah, there is.
You know me, I'm an old school guy, you're an old school guy.
Yeah, we figured that out when we figured out my favorite song is a Conway Twitty song.
I do appreciate what Craig is able to do for Jay Walker, the longtime voice of the Cajuns, and a guest on the podcast, a friend of the podcast. We think the world of Jay and Craig, and this is the part of the year where we get to reacquaint ourselves with our very, very good friends. Non-conference play, sometimes you see guys you've seen before. Other times, you're, hey, man, great to meet you. Because you only know somebody from a voice or an email or just the correspondence from that week. Because outside of Minnesota, I mean, thankfully we did have correspondence with Mike Grimm in the past. We had a chance to meet him 3 years ago when the Eagles and Gophers played in basketball, and we talked about that the week before. But once you get to conference play, you know everybody. There's a sense of comfort. There's a familiarity, and there's a you're home. And when Jay and Craig and the rest of the Cajuns come to Statesboro here in a few days, it's going to have that homey feeling. And it's nice that Georgia Southern doesn't have to make another long trip. This is going to be a big game, and that's something that'll come next week. But this is one you're going to want to be there for. This is a big matchup.
Stay tuned next week for our full dive into the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana. We'll get into the X's and O's, the Jimmies and Joes, as Frank Sulkowski likes to say. We'll get into that next week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But until next week, enjoy an off week where you can watch any college football game that you would want to, any NFL game you would want to, and not have to worry about missing the Eagles. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.